Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
The land is barren and hostile, the resources are gone, the rain no longer falls, the cities are empty, and those who are left huddle in suspicion, hoarding their meagre supplies. And Colm and Lydia wander throughout the land, fleeing the raiders and the underground fire that seeks to devour what's left. Their only hope is the Wishkin. Is that okay?
It's beautiful.
You like that, Joss? The Wishkin is a dystopic novel, probably would be the best way to say it, set in future Australia, and it is the work of author Joss Headley. Welcome to Open House, Joss.
Thank you very much, Sheridan. It's a joy to be here.
103.2 listeners in Sydney will actually already know the voice because you spent years working on that station. The rest of Australia know you now as a novelist. It's your true calling, maybe, hey?
Well, I find the comparison a difficult one to make, I suppose, because they are vastly different. But yeah, I guess ever since I was a little person, the world of literature and imagination has always been profoundly important to me. Actually, and perhaps that's one of the reasons that I was, in fact, drawn to radio, was because of the fact that it depends very much upon painting pictures in people's minds and to use their imagination in a certain way. So I could see that.
The classic phrase is that radio is the theatre of the mind.
Yeah, that's right, most certainly.
But, and you picked up storytelling from your dad too, didn't you?
Oh, my dad. My dad is a consummate storyteller. Extraordinary stories. From when I was a very small person, he was always telling me gorgeous stories that he would invent. He'd make them all up himself, about little animals and creating these little worlds that these little animals lived in, and all the to-ings and fro-ings and comings and goings and dangers and difficulties, and he made it all so profoundly real to me. But my father, though, also would tell the stories of his own life. He came out to Australia from England when he was just 16. And so my father ended up on Brenda Station, which is on the border of Queensland and New South Wales. Mm-hmm. And so for 10 years, he worked there and at a couple of other stations, and he was a boundary rider and jackaroo, and so then would tell us these extraordinary stories of his life. Amazing stories of drought and dereliction, and then incredible stories of great floods. They were stranded for some amazing amount of time.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because then when it comes to your first published novel, The Wishkin, it's set out in outback Australia. It was set in, what, 2030 or something, is it? What? I mean, there's a sign at one stage in the book that actually talks about 2020. Seven, but it's an old sign. So what year are you talking about Wishkin being set in?
Yeah, I like to leave it a little bit vague and nebulous.
Oh, yes, okay, you're going to give us the whole mystery thing. Yeah, right.
But that's right, it is a very old sign, that 2027 sign, and it's been painted over several times as well, and by the time the children see it, it's very faded.
And so here's this Australia that is incredibly destroyed. It really is. It's very dystopic. People talk about utopic ideas, a beautiful idea of the future. This is dystopic. This is, the world's gone to rack and ruin, and Australia is basically as dry can be, and everybody now is hoarding their goods to try and protect themselves.
Yes, and there's raids going on and so forth. I mean, the background that, I mean, people I think would understand immediately, if you think of Mad Max, that kind of wall, the wallpaper of Mad Max is a wallpaper that's not dissimilar to that used in The Wishkin. The two young children are separated from their father very early on, right at the very beginning of the book, and their plan, if that ever was to happen, which they thought probably one day it might, was to journey across the country to meet their father and be reunited with him. In my mind, I've pictured it that they start in South Australia and that they end up there in the far north coast of Queensland.
And the reason for this kind of bleak picture of Australia is this kind of, you know, are you trying to make an ecological statement looking as to, you know, the current problems that we have now and where they could well be?
The book works on a couple of levels. I mean, first and foremost, I would say, though, that it was a work of imagination and that I didn't have an agenda. And many authors would say this, that it's only upon reflection that one sees
all the different aspects of meaning.
That one has actually created.
Right, right.
Well, first of all, I knew that I wanted to write a book about two children surviving without adults. A world without adults when you're a kid. How exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so I knew that I loved that sort of thing as a young person myself, and so I wanted to write that sort of story. And thinking, I really want to write something in Australia of this nature because this is my home and I love it. So, yes, of course, I looked at things ecological, environmental, and so forth, this place that we're in at present, and took those kind of ideas to their nth degree. But ultimately, it became apparent to me through the writing of it that there was something else going on. And there I would begin to talk about things a little more mystical, perhaps, and
more symbolic, more
symbolic,
metaphorical.
And, when we talk about the Wishkin, I guess the idea there is the sense of hope that this mythical group of people can potentially bring some sort of hope to this dry
barren land.
Mm. The book does become about identity and who it is that we are, and that sense of when we come into a community or indeed into a communion, that is when we begin to experience and understand the fullness of who it is that we are.
Mm. So the barren landscape isn't just simply an ecological statement. It's actually saying, well, society itself can actually be barren because we're dry of the essential things, the best things in life, relationships, that kind of stuff.
Our society is very much about serving the self and not the other. And when one serves the self and exists for oneself, then yes, I do believe that one falls into dryness and barrenness. So yes, in the Wishkin, I've used the language of dryness and barrenness to talk about that which is in existence in our present society. As I say, though, I mean, it's a retrospective or I guess a gradual revealing of itself to me, the writer, as I'm going along.
That's really interesting. I remember C.S. Lewis talking about The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and he said he was just writing a little children's book and Aslan came bounding in.
Oh, wow.
This is Open House. Author Joss Headley is with us. She's written this book called The Wishkin. Let's talk about creativity. How do you do your creative work? How do you imagine these worlds? Where do you even begin? You said you started with wanting to write a story about two children. Okay.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
Yeah, golly. I don't really know. It's, I guess, just writing, seeing what comes. And then I spoke a lot with a friend of mine who was wonderful in terms of helping me to brainstorm ideas and helping me to envision that story, coming back to the manuscript, I guess, with a few brainstormed ideas. And I guess it's a very much an organic process because there's certain things that one thinks should perhaps be happening in order to make the story proper. But heaps of stuff appear along the way. So, you know, when you say about C.S. Lewis and Aslan bounding in, absolutely, absolutely, I can see that very, very strongly. Now, look, there's a very major part of this book, which I won't tell you because it'll, you know, terribly spoil things. It's something of profound significance. And it appeared to me in a very strong way on this particular morning. And it was something horrendous. I did not want it to happen. And I struggled with that so much because I just thought, no, no, this is too horrible. It's too horrible. But I knew at the same time that's what had to happen. That was the story.
That's where the story's going.
It was screaming out for it.
So the story really does have a life of its own, doesn't it? It really does. It goes. I've heard that from many other fiction writers that, you are taken to a point where you almost have to write this next bit in, even if you don't want it.
I have to obey. I have to obey the story and the characters. You know, Colm and Lydia, they're very, very dear to me. And Colm especially, you know, so close to my heart. And so I'm writing a sequel at present because I want to be close to him.
Right.
I really do. And I want to see what happens.
Interesting. You as the author. Boy, it's amazing. Knowing you personally as well, I know that you're, you know, a committed Christian. I'm interested to know how that affects your choice of words, how you write. Now, this isn't a Christian book, quote unquote. This is, you know, through a mainstream publisher. It's simply, like you said, it's a work of imagination. But great writers bring the whole of themselves to their work. I'm interested to know how your faith would interact in your choice of words, what you do put in, what you don't put in.
Look, writing is such an incredible thing on a certain level. Like, it's blood out of a stone for me. Look, it's really, really hard. Mm. But then there's this incredible joy that comes, this great wonder at the creative process when one's finished for the day and one looks back upon one's work. It's just this profound satisfaction. I guess with writing the sequel, I'm experiencing something like that in a more conscious way. I guess writing the Wishkin, writing a story, and then it was the gradual process. With the sequel, look, you know, whether or not it will happen in quite the way that I'm envisaging at this point, I'm coming to it with some really defined ideas, the themes, what themes I want to be in existence. And they're coming, again, from that Christian perspective in terms of the communion or community. I suppose then at times I do get a bit afraid that now I'm trying to place my ideas on top of something that really needs to be organically sort of moving and growing. Yes. So I just need the story to grow and develop in its own way.
Because the fiction writer, I remember talking to Bryce Courtney, and he once said, you know, fiction writers, you know, we're not authorized to proselytize, so to speak. You know, you don't actually want to be turning your fiction into non-fiction by saying, here's what you must believe or here's what you must do, so to speak. At the same time, though, I wonder whether those writers who are deeply committed to their faith, deeply committed to Christ, would not maybe write a gratuitous sex scene or something simply for titillation or something like that. There's still a process of editing going on in their own mind.
All right.
Or violence or whatever it might be, or incredible. You might paint a picture of greed, but it may not be considered to be a positive thing or something like that.
Yeah, I see. Okay. There is a scene of violence in the Wishkin, and certain of my friends are quite surprised, you know,
that
I wrote this. And I remember actually when I finished it, I thought, oh my goodness, I just wrote a violence scene. But you know, certainly it's not gratuitous. And I hope that nothing is, you know, gratuitous. If there are things that are dark in there, and there are, it's a dark and difficult tale, then that is there for a purpose. It's not there for some sort of titillation.
Mm. Just finally, your advice to aspiring writers?
Read, and write, as I heard a wonderful writer recently say, Sue Whiting. I thought that was very, very good advice. Read, and write.
There you go, folks. That's it. You can become like Joss Headley. Thanks for your time on the Open House tonight, Joss.
Thank you, Sheridan.
Joss Headley, she's the author of The Wishkin. It's published through Pan Macmillan.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.